This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm joined in the studio by...
Arvind Yuvraj.
And Christine Wong.
It is Fun Friday, of course. We're going to be having a giggle with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with our show to insult us or have some fun or just join in the conversation, please do so. The WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. The reason that we ask is we've got a story that we're going to be starting off with about how some websites are phasing out the idea of passwords. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that we're going to ask you guys about very shortly. That's our first story, of course, top of the day. And then how Chinese police have said that their face recognition software has identified a suspect in a crowd of 50,000 people.
Wow.
Not bad for a first attempt. Then there is an AI-based direct democracy idea coming out of MIT. A little story for you there. Story number four, forget Facebook. Your body emits data. It's not as dirty as it sounds. It's all carbon dioxide based, I can assure you. And then, of course, we will be giving some podcast recommendations for stuff to listen to you over the weekend. I'm getting dagger eyes of Christine already.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Anyway, 018-789-8899 is the number, of course, and on Twitter at BFM Radio. Christine, behave. Arvind, give me a story.
Yeah, so there's this thing called the World Wide Web Consortium, or W3C, and FIDO Alliance, or FIDO Alliance, both of which are web standards bodies. So they've announced that there's a new thing called WebAuthn. It's spelled W-E-B-A-U-T-H-N. WebAuthn, which is a new web authentication standard that lets users replace passwords with more secure login methods and biometrics.
As if kids can't spell already.
Stuff
like this.
Yeah.
This is on websites specifically?
Websites specifically, like email logins and anything that needs a username and a password, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll start to use biometrics and different login methods, like multi-layered login methods. So users can use devices like smartphones, USB tokens, fingerprint scanners, and webcams, which would communicate with the websites via Bluetooth, NFC, or USB. So it's basically like logging into a website using your phone's fingerprint scanner,
mm-hmm.
or using your face, basically, like a face identification thing.
You don't mean like squishing your face in the keyboard?
No, I mean you could try, but you know, it might not work.
It might not work.
It might generate a password.
It might.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly be random each time.
What is happening today?
So the consortium and FIDO Alliance say that relying on passwords is one of the weakest links in web security. It's easily hackable, and a lot of people forget their passwords, or they write it down somewhere and someone else sees what their password is, especially if they have more than one account on a single platform, like you have two Gmail accounts, mm-hmm. or two email accounts and stuff. WebAuthn is basically a multi-factor solution that eliminates this weak link, and it'll change the way people access the web. That is what they're saying. For example, if a user wants to log into a website, they will receive an alert on their smartphone, and then they can use their fingerprint to gain access without using a password at all. Mm. So it's completely connected to the devices that they are using, and then it also needs you to make sure 100% that it is you. So unless someone has your finger, only you can log into the website that you want to log into. The authentication token would only last as long as it takes to authenticate the user, and would require a specific device to authenticate. So kind of like a TAC or like a PIN that you do before making like online banking transactions and stuff.
Right. So there's a real world solution here, because you were having issues earlier on today when you were talking about your password that you had forgotten.
Yeah, because I was saying that because I have so many accounts on so many different platforms that I sort of, I get Chrome to remember my username and password. That's why I never clear my history. So whenever I log into something, my username is there. I shouldn't be saying this, but my username is there. And when you click the password field, it's just, you know, it auto-generates my password. So
everyone knows now, Arvind.
Yeah, everyone knows now.
But stuff like LastPass would help you with that, you know?
Those are like the password lockers.
Yeah, yes. Managers.
But those, I kind of trust those less, because then all my passwords are in one of those lockers.
That's so right. You still need a password to enter that locker.
You just need to remember
one password as opposed to like thousands.
Multiple, and then it keeps it. I don't know. There's something about the mechanism of that sort of like, I don't know why. It just like all of my accounts are in like one locker. I know how safe the locker is, but then it's still a locker that I don't trust. So I kind of trust randomly picking my, you know, trying to remember like stuff or words that I would have used, and then using like an app. Or maybe that's just me. I don't know.
No. I had for a long time, I had the problem of using the same password, but with slight differentiation across, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, that's really stupid, because if somebody can guess one of my passwords, they'll guess the whole thing.
So I
then got one of those locker things. But the idea of this biometrics, I think, is a smart idea. You know, the trouble is my phone, I don't know about yours, Chris, but the fingerprint reader often doesn't work.
See, I was about to say, because a lot of this this kind of web authentication alternative relies a lot on external hardware.
Yeah.
So you either have to, like, I mean, I was going to say buy a webcam, but this isn't like the early 2000s. But you have to rely on your phone to do it, and sometimes the sensor doesn't work, or let's say you have to allow access to your webcam, which is another privacy issue. Like, do you want every single website you have a password on to be allowed to access your face? You know, that's not a fun time, that kind of thing. So I don't really know about this, and I know that it's you know, password protection is a is an issue when it comes to authenticating stuff online, but I don't know, I'm okay. I don't want to, I don't like change.
I kind of like passwords as well, but then we had that story, I think, like last year, where they said that passwords, even though you change it, like maybe you make an A to like an at or something like that, it's still when it shows up in when it's hacked, it still shows up as the alphabet itself. That all this encryption stuff where you can't see the password is only like a, what do you say, it's like a illusion to you,
a false sense of security.
If you get like past the first layer, then you get to see like everything that you're typing in. That's why phones nowadays, you have that eye icon where you want to see the password, you can just click on it and then you see what you're putting in, because it's the same thing. It has a lot of powerful supporters. Like, I think Google is using it, we use it here as well. I think in phases it's going out where you have to, if you want to log into your email, then you get a ping on your phone, and then you have to confirm on your phone, and then you can log into your email on your desktop
using the two-factor authentication
for for Google. Facebook is going to do it as well soon, and Microsoft is also on board. And then they've had they've implemented it for Windows, Mac, Linux, Chrome, and Android platforms. But no news from Apple Safari yet.
Okay, let's ask the folks at home a question. What do you want to ask them?
I want to ask them if they remember all their passwords, and if they don't, where they, how they remember all their passwords, whether they write their passwords down, and if they feel that their passwords are safe enough or not, and will they use something like this?
There you go then, folks. Do you remember all of your passwords? If you don't, do you write them down, or how else do you keep them safe? Get us on 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going to be asking this question all the way through the show, so do get in touch. It is Friday, of course. You've probably got a little bit of free time. Now, moving on to story number two. Chinese, we've been talking about this. What was the name of that piece of software that they were using over in China that was recognizing everybody via facial recognition software? There was a particular name for it.
Oh, SenseTime. They had like a Project Viper.
So that was it, Project Viper. So the Chinese police have said they've used facial recognition to identify, then arrest, a man attending a crowded concert in Nanchang in China, which is the third largest city. This was in the South China Morning Post. They report that security cameras equipped with a with the software pinpointed the man out of an estimated 50,000 people also in attendance at the concert. The 31-year-old guy was reportedly attending a show by the Hong Kong superstar Jackie Chung with his wife and friends last week. Law enforcement approached him soon after the concert. Ah, at least they let him watch the concert. And then the police said he was wanted in connection to a, quote, economic crime. So in China, as we know, face recognition has been used in train stations to find human traffickers, in airports as passengers board domestic and international flights, and soon perhaps even on street corners inside the houses, one thing or another, of course, to deter stuff like jaywalking and whatever outside. But face matching is both instant and invisible, making it open to potential abuses, as we know. But I don't know about this. I mean, I think it's quite an achievement if you've got a whole bunch of people in one area to recognize one guy out of 50,000. That being said, out of 50,000 people in one stadium, I'm guessing that at least more than one of them have some kind of criminal record. Do you know what I mean? And so I'm not entirely sure whether to mark this down as a success or not.
It's a success for the technology. I mean, the fact that you were able to identify one face out of 50,000 people is completely ridiculous.
That's,
so, you know, to the AI that did that, congratulations, you've done your job. But
give yourself a slap on the chips.
With how the AI could be used and stuff like that, and the potential implications of the fact that this facial recognition does work in that way. I mean, already China is doing stuff where, like, with the social credit thing that I believe y'all talked about yesterday as well.
Yeah.
this just feels very like it's going to go towards Big Brother territory very quickly.
I don't know. I'm gonna say that I like it.
You like it?
Yeah, I actually like it because it's I know, you know, the surveillance stuff where people say like, oh, they're tracking you and they look for you. It's already happening. It's been going on for like way longer than we're aware of. But if they're using it for things like catching criminals and people who have like who can be a danger to society and stuff, if that's the limit, which I know it's not, but if that's the limit, then it's good because we always talk about how people are attacked in public places and how people have, you know, all sorts of attacks and stuff that have happened like during concerts and in when they're like large groups of people, and we're like, you know, there needs to be a way where you can stop it from happening before it happens. And this looks like one of those like preemptive ways. If it's abused, then it can be abused to like, you know, to like any length, and they can use it to do whatever they want. But if they're just using it to pick people out of these crowded places to make sure that everyone else is safe, or to track them from, or to stop them from not doing anything more, then I think it's fine. I mean, it looks like it's super effective.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Right, folks, we're asking you a question. Arvin forgets his password regularly. So we're asking you, you know, if you do forget your password, what do you do about it? How do you keep it safe? How do you log your passwords? Do you have like a password locker, so to speak? Do you write them down? What do you do with it? Let us know on 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Let's have some music. It is Feist with My Moon, My Man. When we get back, Christine has a story about a plan for an AI-based direct democracy. Very interesting stuff. Don't go anywhere. This is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bureaucratic failures multiply. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
Arvin Yuvaraj.
We've been asking you a question since the start of the show. We did our first story about how websites will soon be phasing out passwords in favor of biometric data, stuff like fingerprint scanning and retina scanning and face scanning and all that kind of stuff. So we asked you, you know, if you... how do you keep your passwords safe? If you forget them, what do you do about it? And how do you store your passwords? So we asked you on 018-789-8899 and on Twitter at BFM Radio, and we've had a few answers. Here's what we've got so far.
Yeah, so we've got, this is from Dr. Kyrie, who says, I don't write down my passwords anywhere. I just depend on the forget password option when I do forget.
I think we've all done that a few times. Yeah.
As a strategy for, you know, remembering your passwords, like, it's a valid strategy, I suppose. Maybe
forget
not.
It. I've forgotten. Let's just get a new one.
So that's coming from that. And then we also have another message that's from a number. Ending in, this is from Raz, who says, I don't trust password lockers because you may never know if those lockers were actually created by a hacking syndicate. Worse, if the security of the lockers are not up to security standards, and then if I forget them, I just go through the process of resetting them. A lot of people just really rely on the forget password options, it seems. But here's a really good suggestion for passwords if you want to make one that is easy to remember for you and you don't have to write them down anywhere. So this is coming from a WhatsApp number ending in 2557, who says, I've read an article which gave an extremely good suggestion for passwords. You have to have a meaningful phrase that only you remember. Therefore, you only use the first letter of each word as your password. So instead of memorizing the password, you memorize the phrase and then you just put the letter. So for example, if the phrase was, my first car was a Proton Saga, the password would be M1CWAPS, for example.
Right.
That sounds...
That's pretty good. I like that, you know?
Because no one's going to guess the phrase.
Yeah, no one... The password itself looks like it's random, but it's not.
Nice. Interesting ideas. Okay. Interesting. Keep them coming, folks. Keep them coming. 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Moving on to story number three. This plan for an AI-based direct democracy outsources votes to a what?
A predictive algorithm.
There we go. That's the rest of them might see. AI is not so good, right? Come on, a predictive algorithm. Tell me more about this. It's really interesting.
So what it is that there seems to be a bit of an issue with people who participate in democracy around the world. I mean, in the last presidential election in the US, voter turnout, it was like 67%. The EU's parliamentary election saw 42%. Even in New York City's last mayoral election, only 24% of residents actually voted at all.
Right.
So there seems to be a problem with, you know, people's participation in the project of democracy. So Cesar Hidalgo, who is the director of the Collective Learning Group at MIT Media Lab, did a TED Talk in Vancouver, and his point of view is that democracy just has a bad user interface.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so in the sense of that we elect and rely on politicians to aggregate the views and needs of their constituents, but politicians are people, so people make mistakes and people, you know, just talk about, they may not necessarily actually fail to account adequately for the particular needs of their individual constituents. So the idea that some researchers have suggested is get rid of the whole system of having politicians who are people and just have ideas and basically get a direct democracy in. So a system in which every individual gets to vote on every issue. And so but the problem with that is that, you know, people don't normally think about politics 24/7 unless mm-hmm. you are a politician, right? So how do you get past that? Is by creating an AI that basically votes for you.
So the AI stands in for the politician.
It basically stands in for, like, your thought process to do with politics.
Okay.
So instead of having a politician tell you, okay, this and this and this and this, and you should vote for me and this and this and this, the AI kind of removes that because it will measure what you like, what you dislike, your views, your thoughts, whatever. And it's kind of like how Spotify works where it
predicts what you're going to like.
Yeah, predicts what you're going to like, mm-hmm. except in this case, it's predicting based on what you're like on who you might vote for, or what you might vote for, the issues that you might vote for, and then it just kind of does it for you.
Interesting idea.
Okay, so it makes it like compulsory for everyone to cast a vote. Yeah. If you sign up for the AI.
I was saying to Christine earlier on, if you gave people the ability to vote from your phone, mm-hmm. for example, I think the vast majority of people with a cell phone would vote, right?
Yeah.
So that it kind of removes the need for any sort of political campaign in a way because basically all it does is that you like what you like mm-hmm. and then your phone, let's say, for example, just goes, okay, they like this, vote for this.
But to play devil's advocate,
yes,
that's also very Cambridge Analytica, is it not?
Very. So mm-hmm. there are a lot of concerns about this idea of this predictive algorithm being used for a direct democracy because obviously the plus side is that if it's that instant, everyone will just do it and then everyone will vote. Basically, pretty much.
Yeah.
But the systems will have to be highly secured. And also, there's no real answer as to how this new system of automated direct democracy would be made equally accessible and workable for all voting citizens. And also, who would propose the bills in the first place? How fast would your algorithm perhaps detect a change in your opinion? Or, you know, how, you know, where is the place of advocacy in this whole thing? But, you know, it's got its pros and cons. And also, the fact that it will be a data collection mine.
Mm-hmm. A huge one.
Huge one.
Yeah, yes. So yeah, Hidalgo also said that in the beginning, what he wanted to do was he wanted to get people to vote for every single thing, every single rule and bill that was passed on, that he wanted everyone to vote for every single thing that was going to pass through the lawmakers.
Yeah.
But he said that because people go through like a couple dozen or a few dozen bills a day, the load is just too much.
It's too much.
Yeah, it's too much. Citizens can't be sitting down and like looking at like 60 bills a day. So then he went to this because it sort of collects their mindset and then votes for the things that they might vote for in the future.
See, and then the other thing is, you know, with this for me as well, is like, how do you draw the line with who can vote for what?
Mm.
Because for example, if a man votes on like specifically female, like women's rights issues, mm-hmm. like how do you navigate that? Like how do you, you know, or for example, about LGBT issues, that kind of thing. Like how do you actually navigate that if everyone can vote for everything?
Mm. Yeah.
Because some things are not applicable to some people, basically. Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of questions about it, but I am always up for any idea that will promote the participation of people getting to vote in any sort of democracy, because that's kind of the whole point.
Well, I think this will be interesting, you know, especially in light of what's going on right now. If you get the chance, head over to, you can find it on YouTube. It would be the TED 2018 in Vancouver. It is Cesar Hidalgo from the Collective Learning Group. You can find out more information about that.
I just want to know, if someone, like let's say this AI, it does the job for you, and then they're saying like democracy, but would you rather go yourself and manually cast a vote, or would you want people to just be able to do it automatically? Because the way I see it, if it's made so simple, then it's not actual participation. It's just someone going onto like a survey list on their phones, and then they are not sure, they're not aware of the implications of their vote. They're just going like, oh, I'm going to cast my vote to do my bit. I don't care about anything. I don't know what this person is doing or what X or Y is doing. I'm just going to get it over with, which is worse.
I see where you're coming from, but I think, you know, as the stories that we tell and the news stories that we read and the stuff that we're exposed to on a day-to-day basis, you know as well as I do of that, you know, the next generation, how they have time for things and the way in which they use their time.
Mm-hmm.
Something like this for them is ideal.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, as sure. long as they are aware of what they're doing and they've followed the research and they've read and read and read about it, maybe this could be a solution in the future for getting people out to vote, you know? Because yeah. they don't have to go out to vote. I mean, for us, for me in particular, the idea of going to a polling station myself physically is of great importance, you know, and that's the way I was raised. But I don't know, you know, kids beyond me may find it much easier to just click done.
I mean, for me, what I would be curious to see is, you know, because sometimes, you know, the younger generation do not understand politics or don't understand exactly, you know, what they might like. So what I would like to see is if the what the algorithm would predict for me, for instance, and to not automatically cast a vote, but to give me like, okay, I think you'd vote for this because this.
Would you like to know more? Yeah,
like, would you like to, you know, and to learn from that? I think that would be amazing because it would really promote education about politics as well as, you know, encouraging participation.
Yeah, and the issues that you're going to be voting. You'll be able to find out more about it.
So I mean, give them like a context in the beginning before they vote, I guess. So
exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right. I mean, not just a kind of blind vote, but you know, give you time running up to the elections, you know, to kind of research the stuff, and then you cast your vote from your, you know, okay, between 9 and 10, you've got a vote.
Click,
done.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting story, that one.
Very
well done, Chris. Okay, time to move on. Music coming up in a few minutes from Lynyrd Skynyrd with Gimme Three Steps. Before we do that, though, a quick reminder, we are asking you about passwords. And what do you do to remind yourself about your passwords? What do you do when you forget your passwords, and how do you store them? Let us know on 018-789-8899. The reason we're asking that is because we have a story about how websites are phasing out some passwords, the use of passwords very soon, moving on to biometrics. Anyway, music, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Gimme Three Steps, and when we get back, final story before we move on to podcast recommendations. Forget about Facebook. Your body emits enough data. Don't go anywhere. Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Christine Wong.
On to our final story of the day before we give you some podcast recommendations. But before that, of course, we've been asking you since the top of the show, what do you do with your passwords? How do you save them? What do you do if you forget them? We've had a few messages come in. What have we got, Chris?
So we got this from Sunil, who says, I'm so dependent on Chrome's built-in saved password feature. Without that, I can't remember all of them. Mm-hmm. And the password hints are also useless because I can't remember them too. Which I really relate to on a spiritual level there, because I... and all the password hints that I have were made like 10 years ago, and I do not remember the context of any of them. So. Yeah.
Folks, we'll be honest with you. During the break, we were ranting about, you know, one thing or another, and online banking became one of those issues.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you've forgotten your password and you've forgotten one thing, it becomes a real
You've
pain
got to jump through
butt.
So many hoops, and it's... anyway.
Anyway then, right. Story number four. Forget about Facebook. Your body emits data that could be used to read your emotions, check your health, and even track aggression. This sounds a little bit even more spooky than the Cambridge Analytica stuff.
A wee bit. Also, this comes from the same TED conference in Vancouver that I got the predictive algorithm story from. Because apparently Vancouver's just doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Right. So basically the idea is that even if you opt out of Facebook and all its data sharing tendencies, if you avoid using a smartphone, if you're not even on the internet, your body still creates data. So this was demonstrated by Poppy Crum, who is the chief scientist at Dolby Labs at the TED conference in Vancouver. And so this was what actually happened during the talk. So Crum showed the audience a very frightening video. And then she offered a data visualization showing the carbon dioxide exhaled by the people in the theater while the video played. She had been very sneakily tracking the audience's carbon dioxide emissions. And you can clearly see where the emissions jumped up as like a deep red cloud, which was a direct effect of the collective suspense creating a spike in carbon dioxide.
Wow. Mm.
So that body data alone, I guess is the closest term I have for that, you know, told you exactly how everyone was feeling in that performance space at the same time, immediately.
Okay.
Which is completely ridiculous. So this is the kind of passive data collection technology that could one day, according to Crum, be used to reveal our inner lives to teachers, doctors, and of course, corporations. She has given a few examples of how this could be used in those industries. So, for example, if a high school counselor realized that an outwardly cheery student is having a really hard time, or, for example, the authorities knowing the difference between a mental health crisis and another kind of aggression, or even allowing healthcare providers access to speech data that could detect diseases, or letting teachers have access to information about how students are reacting to certain lessons, that kind of thing. So this is terrifying to me. I mean, so Crum is very optimistic about it, and she says that, you know, it will be used for good if we let it. But the fact that our seemingly subjective quantifiers, like, you know, our emotions can now be measured in that way based on how our body reacts and, mm-hmm. and so quietly and passively as well, is terrifying to me.
is Crumb's first name is Poppy?
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Dear.
Because she last year she was doing the thing with Dolby, so she works
yeah.
for Dolby.
Yeah,
Yeah. She was giving movie studios, so she was testing
yes.
what they responded to, and then they were she was telling movie studios what kind of effects and sounds they should use in their movies. So if you look at a lot of modern horror movies, like the newer ones, they use either sounds or
yeah.
visuals or even color that
yes.
sort of gets the best reaction from people. Not even reactions that are like jumping out of their seats or whatever, but just by looking at how much pent up fear they have in them to make their horror movie more effective or like action movie. She even measured how emotional people got during certain like, you know, soft scenes
yeah.
or whatever, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, she's been doing like a lot of good work with Dolby and things.
Yeah, let's clarify.
She's basically been scaring people, helping the film people.
Scaring
yeah.
the life out of them.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, let's clarify.
Yeah.
She is a neurophysiologist by training. So yeah, she studied how people watch movies using EEG caps, pulse oximeters, trackers that measure heart rate and sweat response, and thermal imaging cameras to kind of see how people reacted to things. And I mean, I think it's really cool, but obviously there is a very, very big implication about privacy.
Mm. Yeah.
Because like, if people can just know stuff about you by like how much you're breathing out, that's not a fun time for how much, you know, that's information you can't help but give out.
Yeah.
Without an option here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is also one of those things, like, you know, how we look at some animals and then we follow the things that they do. Like, we look at bats and then
yeah.
we make flying objects that replicate them, and dolphins and sonar and stuff. This relates a lot to how dogs feel. So if you've spent any number of years with a dog, you'll know that it can pick up on your senses. I don't know how it does it, but it's stuff like that. It's like, you know, how much you breathe, how you move, how you walk. Body language is like a huge thing. And certain animals like dogs and other kinds of animals can pick up on those minor things that you don't see, including the way you breathe and how much you breathe and how many times you breathe in a minute and stuff. They know, and they can sense whether you're aggressive or whether this person is safe, whether this person is okay to approach and stuff.
Which reminds me of a kind of semi-creepy story about there was about a cat in an old person's home.
I've heard this story.
This story.
Is this a Friday the 13th kind
Friday
of
Friday the 13th
okay.
story.
Okay.
So what this cat would do is it would be very friendly to, you know, many people in the old person's home. But what it would do specifically, it would walk and it would get very friendly with one particular person over a series of days, and then slowly that person would pass away.
It could sense the oncoming death.
That's of people, yeah.
Of
yes.
people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a Grim Reaper cat.
It is. And it probably sensed that, you know, the person was, you know, slowing down
yeah,
and the body
yeah.
was working slower than usual,
so,
and
yeah,
it sort
yeah.
of approached him, you know, to maybe give it companionship or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, what
exactly.
animals do.
Ooh, I do love cats, I do. Honestly. Anyway, we've got one more, podcast suggestions for you coming up after these couple of tracks. But we do have time, if you are still interested, to let us know how you save your passwords and what you do if you forget them. Let us know on 01878988899 or, of course, on Twitter at BFM Radio. Music coming up from Elastica with Connection, followed by The Hollies. When we get back, podcast suggestions for what you should listen to over the weekend here on Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up, but before we do that, of course, we're going to give you some podcast suggestions for stuff that you might enjoy to listen to over the weekend. Give yourself, you know, top up your knowledge a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start off with why co-working spaces are having a boom moment.
Yeah, so over the past year, co-working spaces seem to have really upped their gear, and they're now a lot more aggressive and sustainable too. Recently, the Co-working Unconference Asia 2018 happened in Penang and brought in some 320 people from 30 35 different countries. So on Tech Talk on Thursday at 11 a.m., we spoke to Steve Monroe, founder of Hubud, which is Bali's first co-working space, and founder of Kappa, which is the co-working alliance of Asia Pacific, to talk to us about the attraction of a co-working space, how they've made Bali a co-working destination for the world, and why Malaysia is on their radar.
Yeah, then we also, on Tuesday, we had this interview, Audrey did this interview with Johnny Gillett, or he goes by the name of the Journeyman. Mm-hmm. So basically what he does is he gives companies and brands their own story for people who don't have a story to back up their products or their campaigns. It's because all of us relate to like good stories, right?
Yeah.
We want to
yeah.
know like how something came up or how to sell a certain product. So with the right skills to sell your business better, create better business presentations and help your brand resonate with customers, that's what he talks about. All of this using just basic storytelling.
Really good stuff. And then on Wednesday, I managed to speak to Chris Tiffin, who's the CEO of Boost. Is Malaysia ready to be a cashless society? Mm-hmm. Well, Chris behind Boost says it is, and they're ready to do everything they can to take a cashless mainstream into the local scene. As I said, I spoke with Chris Tiffin, the CEO of Boost, about Malaysia as a cashless society, the growth spurt that Boost are enjoying at the moment, and the challenges of growing Boost in a more physical cash based society. They are the app that has taken over one of the universities and they've made it entirely cashless. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of other universities coming on board as well. It seems to be a great idea.
Yeah.
And it would have been something really useful when I'd have been at uni.
Yeah,
because I certainly had no cash back then.
How many users? Like, did he say 2 million?
Two million. It went from 600,000 to 2 million in a very short
less
space
than a
of
year.
Time. Less
yeah.
than a year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. That's all the time that we have. But of course, we'll quickly run through the stories just in case you missed anything. We started off with
we spoke about how websites will be phasing out passwords very soon and using biometrics and other things like USB tokens and stuff.
We then spoke about how the Chinese AI, the police AI, has proved to be very successful picking out one man amongst a crowd of 50,000.
Mm. And then we talked about how the concept of an AI-based direct democracy would outsource votes to a predictive algorithm and whether or not we were like okay with that. And we finished off with forget Facebook, your body actually emits data that could be used to read your emotions, check your health, and track aggression, because, you know, privacy is an illusion.
That's all the time that we have. Of course, if you missed any part of this show, you can download the BFM app from the Apple App Store or, of course, from the Google Play Store. Now, don't go anywhere, though, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, of course, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. The iCliff Leadership and Governance Centre was created by Bank Negara Malaysia 15 years ago with the aim of levelling up executive and organisational development in the Asian region. The Breakfast Grill caught up with the CEO, Ranjiv Peshwaria, to discuss developments with the organization, as well as the most pressing issues facing corporate leaders today. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, let's have some music. It is Green Day with Warning here on BFM 89.9, the business station. Have a nice weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.